The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM Stereo.
The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. For those people that just joined us, we are now commencing with the Legal Hour. We've had the Leadership Hour with Adil Njabaleng from Gauteng, and we had Hanifa Jabbar speaking about the empowerment of women. And now we have Faisal Bardin on the line, old regular, and of course Nazir Park. Faisal, you with us?
Alaykum salam, Ihsan, and all of your listeners. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, they were trying to get hold of you, Faisal, but I see you say you might.
Sorry, when I was.
Sit a bit late, shy, Kamak.
Yeah, not caught up by some people you have been.
Now, okay, shukran for being on. What Turin say is the. And then Nazir, salam alaikum, you back?
Wa alaikum salam, Ihsan. I am here. Wa alaikum salam also to the radio listeners of the radio, Voice of the Cape.
Okay. Shukran. And how's the weather out in Cravenby?
Always pleasant, Ihsan. Okay. Always pleasant weather we have here.
Okay, because it's definitely a different weather zone on that side. So,
close okay. to the airport, you always have the benefit of good weather.
Okay, alhamdulillah. And Nazir's on another topic. Now that we don't have planes anymore flying, I mean, it must be a very peaceful area now. I mean, normally you have the planes flying directly over that area.
It is. It's actually strange, Ihsan. You know, we've become so accustomed to the lovely sounds of the jets flying over your head, and now all of a sudden you have this complete and utter deafness. So it is rather strange, but we'll see what happens in the coming days with the announcement that's going to be made soon.
Yeah, inshallah. Okay, gentlemen, so we've got a few items that we need to deal with now. Nazir, you have been tasked this evening to deal with that whole issue of the dog. Especially for those dog owners who feel that, you know, they can just have dogs and there's no consequences when these dogs start biting people and, of course, causing damage. So just bear that in mind. And Faisal, on your side, I've asked that we discuss meeting procedure. You sit on various boards. You've sat on a number of EXCOs. You still sit on a number of EXCOs. I sit on a number of EXCOs. And I thought maybe, you know, we can give a bit of the benefit of our experience, organizational experience, to people struggling with meeting procedures and protocol. Maybe Faisal, Nazir, if you can indulge us, maybe just come in if you can on this issue. But maybe Faisal, you can kick off with the issue of meeting procedure.
Well, look, I think you know, with meetings, a lot of people don't like meetings, Ihsan. You know, they some people think meetings is a waste of time. You know, they rather want to be out there and get the job done. But I think meetings, just to start with, meetings are important if you structure the meetings. And I'm sure you and I and many other people have been in meetings where you get very frustrated that, you know, people either don't stick to agenda, they come without agenda, or they're all over the show, and then the meeting becomes fruitless and you don't achieve anything out of that meeting. So just as an introduction, so people might just think, yes, meeting, talking about meetings might be a bit of a boring topic, but, you know, if you want to, you know, achieve an objective, you know, and get the result, then maybe you need to structure your meetings properly so that at the end of the day, you know, you get out of the meeting what you plan to get out of that meeting, Ihsan.
In other words, you start off with a plan. You don't just have a meeting for the sake of a meeting. Like, let's assume, like, you know, a lot of organizations, they will say, okay, elke infaniman op 'n Woensdag gaan ons 'n meeting hou. And then, of course, you get to the meeting, and as you said, people don't have a proper agenda, and they have no plan in terms of what they need to get out of that meeting. And, of course, it just becomes a meeting so that people can have some liquor, dry biscuits, and tea, and, of course, then go home after that, but they've achieved absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's 100%, Ihsan. So your objectives are important. your attendees are important, who to attend that meeting, and obviously make sure, you know, that people are properly invited to the meeting. And nowadays, we're having these schools, but the Zoom and Skype and those type of meetings is just a different ball game as far as that is concerned. But any meeting, you know, needs people to attend and confirm whether they are attending that meeting. If people is not going to attend the meeting, then, you know, your meeting is not going to happen and you're not going to achieve your objectives. And then, like you said earlier on, the agenda. Mm-hmm. What is the agenda of your meeting? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's important, so that, you know, the issues that you need to discuss must be on that agenda.
Yeah, and then of course, Faisal, you have, like, you know, your the people that must actually the main parties to a meeting. I mean, normally in an organizational meeting, it's probably from the masjid perspective, and is that the treasurer is a very important person in that meeting, because normally people would want to understand the state of finances of an organization. I mean, that for me is probably one of the key agenda items in any meeting. You agree?
That's 100%. You know, in the organization, whether it's the masjid committee or a club or a just an association, a hiking club, a running club, whatever it is, you know, finances are an important aspect, and proper and transparency is important. Proper accounting is important, so that treasurer needs to account for finances, and he should have a regular agenda item on the agenda, so that he's given opportunity to explain, you know, what is the financial state and health of the organization. So that's very important, and sometimes you'll find that agenda item dominates also many meetings, because you know finance is critical for many organizations.
Okay, fine. And Nazir, I just want to bring you in here because you are the litigator. You have so many situations where people come to your office. I mean, we've all had this experience where people say, I want to interdict a meeting from taking place, based on whatever the issues are. Now, Nazir, I want you just to take people through what an interdict would cost if one decides to interdict a meeting.
Yes, yeah, son. You know, one must draw a distinction between the two types of interdicts that one gets in civil litigation. The one would be an interim one, and the one would be a final one. The two carry somewhat two different types of requirements. And normally these things are brought on an extremely urgent basis. And when one looks at the cost, you have to also bear in mind that high court litigation involves the services of an advocate as well, who is obviously now going to budget in accordance with the time that he's now required to launch these proceedings on behalf of the individual. So we're probably talking in a rough estimate the region of between 35,000 and 40,000 rand to bring an urgent interdict to court. Because, like I said, it isn't urgent. You're going to brief an advocate on short notice who's got to leave everything else he or she is busy with and then start drafting this particular process. And so it's a costly exercise.
Okay, so the reason why I'm saying this, because sometimes you hear these things being thrown around. You know, we're going to bring an interdict against him, we're going to stop this and we're going to stop that. And I don't think people realize the cost implication attached to these things. It's a very, very expensive exercise. So, I mean, I'm glad that you've now mentioned that it can cost up to 40,000 rand, just, and that is your deposit.
That is a deposit. That is just to draft the papers, just to get it issued, get it served, and then you're in the throes of it. So
yeah, and if somebody opposes it,
costly exercise.
Yeah, Faisal, what's your? I mean, you've had experiences of that.
Yeah, I had experience where you know, threats were given that they are going to interdict a meeting of a company of directors or in shareholder meetings, and you know, threats came and threats gone, and there was no interdict, no court application, and for that very reason, because it's so expensive.
Yeah,
you know, so you know, people get invited to the meeting rather than have your opportunity to discuss issues, and you know, and avoid going to the litigation route if possible. You know, you can't always avoid it, but if possible, it's going to save you quite a bit of money, as Nazir just explained how expensive it is to get an interdict out there.
Okay, now Faisal, a lot of these issues, you know, come as a result of improper communication mechanisms. Number one, that maybe the constitution or the founding documents of an organization is not in order. In other words, they don't set out properly the powers and the competencies of the various office bearers and or members of that organization. And as a result of this improper communication, then people start misunderstanding each other.
Yeah. I think it's twofold. One, as you explained now, the founding document does not perhaps deal with meeting procedure. Alternative, the founding document does deal with meeting procedures, but the members or the exco doesn't follow that procedure as dictated in that founding document, whether it's the constitution or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So you got it on two, matters as far as how they do not follow either the proper procedure as dictated by the document, or is not sufficiently described in the document how they should proceed with these type of meetings. So if that is the case, people should get assistance. Whether it's the exco, and the exco needs assistance, they need to get advice and help, and just to steer the organization, to conduct proper meetings, because you're going to have members who is not going to be happy and not going to be satisfied as far as our meetings progress, and then they're going to want to take action against the organization.
Yeah, I think Faisal, what's also missing, and Nazir, I think you can also add to this, what's also missing in a lot of organizations is the terms of reference for specific duties and committees. Like, for instance, you'll find a situation where a treasurer feels that they have the upper hand because they have signing powers on the account. But the problem with that is, it's not that that person feels that he's got the upper hand. I think that there has not once again been sufficient communication in respect of a terms of reference for that person in its execution of its duties. What do you think, Nazir?
I've had a bit of experience with some of the SGBs for some of the schools that we've done some recovery work for. And if one looks at the mechanisms that they put in place with regard to the certain role players of the SGB, you're 100% correct. My experience is that there isn't an aspect of intimidation there. Whether or not it's because of signing powers or not, I'm not entirely sure. But I can, without reservation, say that a lot of people are more intimidated by roles that they hold at this particular board levels.
Mm-hmm. Here's a nice question that came in. And Faisal, you need to take note, and maybe it's something we need to put in our diaries. It says here, can our esteemed legal person please organize workshops for masjid committees specifically regarding meeting procedure and legalities? It's sadly lacking in the Muslim community. It will be highly appreciated. Amazing community service. Allah will reward, inshallah. So it's very nice of that person to say that. But I think the substance of what that person is saying is that probably correct, that it's not that our people are ignorant, or that people are, they don't care about the content of the Constitution. Sometimes things are just has always been done in a certain way, and they've adopted a laxy-daisy approach in terms of protocol, and that has become the norm. So if somebody comes on that's new, or somebody that has now obviously an objection, and they refer to the constitution, then they will say, yeah, but no, yes, I hear an say, that type of approach. So maybe this person is absolutely correct that we do need this type of workshops.
Yeah, just on that point, Ikshan, I have prepared a presentation, and there was a plan to go and do a workshop. But this was before COVID-19, mm-hmm. and then that workshops were all cancelled. So yes, definitely we can revive that, and inshallah, do that presentation, because it's been done already. We have to just have to relook at it, and then we could do something in the future, inshallah, when it's possible.
And Nazir is a very, very, it's a question, it's what I call the $1 million question, and if this question can be answered successfully, then of course half the world's problems will be solved. And that question from the listener is, Salam Ihsan, why are legal fees so expensive? Nazir, you're going to have the honor of answering that question now.
Yes, son, you're putting me on the spot, but I'm going to try.
It's fine, I'll help you. No, I never let my guests be on the spot. I always come to the rescue if I have to.
Well, part of the reason why legal fees, well, look, the earlier question that we alluded to was the issue of urgency and the extreme circumstances that one has to bring such applications. So effectively, one has to now put all else work aside.
But Nazir, don't talk about urgent applications. Talk about why are the fees so expensive? Generally, not urgent applications.
Generally, it depends on the level of experience that a particular practitioner brings to the table, but one also has to bear in mind that high court litigation is generally more expensive because we invoke the services of an advocate who charges by the day and not by the hour. And that is the challenge that many clients have, because unlike attorneys who charge by the hour, the advocates will be insistent on being paid their day fees. So if you're going to a trial that lasts 3 or 4 days, that particular advocate, whoever you brief on them on the matter, is going to have to be covered for that particular time that he or she is going to spend on the matter. And they don't come in on cheap rates. I mean, the best you could negotiate with an advocate that's got a reasonable experience under his or her belt could be up to 15,000 to 20,000 rand per day.
So advocate
fees alone is exorbitant.
But I think also just to add to what you're saying, Nazir, is that lawyers don't regulate their own fees. The fees are given in terms of a tariff that the legal practice council puts out there, or the minister puts. I don't think it's the minister, I think it's the legal practice council that comes up with a number, and of course lawyers charge in accordance with that tariff. So
that's right.
It's probably lawyers has probably always been expensive. Faisal, what is your take on it?
Yes, exactly, and I think Nazir is 100% correct. That was the expertise that we're talking about here, and you'll find that attorneys, depending on their years of practice, they would charge according to a certain tariff that is recommended by the Legal Practice Council. And if you're a practicing attorney for over 20 years, your fee is going to be much more than a professional assistant or article clerk.
What would the recommended tariff be for an attorney with 20 odd years of experience?
Your hourly rate could be easily about 2,500 rand to maybe 3,500 rand in that bracket.
Is that an hour? That's 2,500 to 3,500 rand an hour.
An hour for an attorney who's got more than 20 years of experience or practice, yes.
No. Okay. Nazir, just I want you to comment on that, because I want listeners to understand that the service that Voice of the Cape brings to your homes, at the moment, if I have the two of you on air for an hour, including myself, then of course we would have been entitled to charge what Faisal said now per hour. So that's almost 10,000 rand an hour if you add VAT to it. So that's just to chew on that so long. We're going to go for a quick ad break. And Nazir, I want you just to comment on that when we come back.
The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
And we are back with the Legal Hour. I've got Nazir Parker and I've got Faisal Bardin on the line. We're talking about various aspects, more particularly the costs of lawyers, and that obviously came up as a result of one of the questions on the WhatsApp line. But we're also speaking about protocol, meeting protocol, mosque meetings, and you know, ways to improve the situation at the committee level. And of course, Nazir is going to give us a little bit of a rundown of this dog case that happened a few days ago. But Nazir, just coming back to the issue of costs. So it's actually the wise thing to start talking to people and resolving conflict without having to come to lawyers. Nazir?
I suppose that would be the sensible thing. Try and talk the problem out prior to having engaged the services of professionals. But unfortunately, sometimes, you know, things escalate to a level where the intervention of attorneys are required. But as we've been promoting on this radio station for as long as I can remember, I think a lot of parties should try and mediate matters prior to even going to or thinking about court processes, because that is really where the costs are consumed rapidly, as opposed to sitting around the table for maybe an hour, hour and a half, to try and resolve the matter around the table, where you spend far less legal fees and you get an immediate result. But unfortunately, sometimes you just can't end up settling a particular dispute, and the court will have to intervene.
Yeah, I think, Nazir, what I think a lot of committees are failing in terms of the mosque committees is that they should have a person, and maybe not even the imam of the masjid. Maybe the imam can obviously comment on the issues pertaining to Sharia and on the religious issues. But they should maybe have a person of that community who's maybe a lawyer, who's maybe an accountant, or maybe even somebody in one of the other professions, to be the mediator. And of course, that person must try to resolve a dispute at mosque level. And of course, that person can't resolve it through mediation. They must switch to arbitration almost immediately. And of course, whatever ruling that person makes, in of course listening to both parties and listening to the sheikh or the imam pertaining to the Sharia aspect of the dispute, is to make a finding, and everybody must agree to actually abide by that finding. And in that way, you don't have situations where we waste valuable community money and mosque money on frivolous lawsuits. Mm. Can you comment on that, Faisal and Nazir?
Yeah, Nazir, you can go ahead first.
I'm 100% behind you on that recommendation. I think that, you know, the invoking mediation proceedings and or arbitration proceedings is far less expensive. It is far more clinical. It is far more decisive than any court process is going to give you in a short time period. I fully back you on that statement. But, you know, unfortunately, I see a lot more mass litigation coming out, and I don't know why, but for some reason it's becoming a more common thread in our courtrooms, where committees and community members are having disputes ventilated in the courtroom.
Mm. Faisal, your point on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, having the issues discussed and resolutions found around the table would be, you know, first prize and the best option to go. But why is it not happening, you know, that the people resorting first to that and resolving the problems around the table? I don't know. We've always encouraged that. We've never encouraged on the radio to, you know, first litigate and then mediate or arbitrate, you know. So it's so expensive going to court, and also the
uncertainty
faced there. Yes, some people do find it's traumatic going to court. Besides the cost itself, you know, just going to court and being there in the court and being cross-examined, etc., is not a pleasant experience. So I don't know why people are not opting for the mediation process. But remember, when you go for mediation, both parties must be on board with the mediation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not on board and you're not wanting to, you know, resolve this matter out of court, and then I think the parties are wasting their time.
Yeah, but Faisal, what I think can happen, I mean, I hear what you're saying, that the parties must be on board because mediation is a voluntary process. But I think if the at the general meeting of those masjids, at the annual general meeting, somebody must move a motion that they should write into the constitution a conflict resolution clause. In other words, saying that so-and-so or this group of people will be able to mediate. And, of course, if they can't mediate, it will go to arbitration immediately, you know, and must be settled within 48 hours. But they can write that into their constitution. And, of course, if you have your AGM, you have your majority of members there. I can't see that the membership of that institution opposing such a motion. But once it's in that particular document, then the parties don't have a choice. They will have to mediate before they can actually go to court. Because if they get to court and one of the parties raises as an exception, was a point in limine that this matter was supposed to go to mediation and then to arbitration, and only thereafter it can come to court, the matter will be kicked out of court immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Nazir, your comment on that?
I found that is 100% spot on. The legal basis for that is, so the argument therefore is sound. If they do invoke and include these particular clauses in the regulatory documents like the constitution, then it's forced upon the relevant role players to resolve their disputes around a mediation forum or arbitration forum. Because like you say, a court is going to kick the matter out of the door immediately if that particular defense is raised.
Faisal?
And I think it's an excellent idea.
Faisal?
Yes, no, I agree 100% with that. I've managed to, just for interest sake, I managed to retrieve the presentation I mentioned earlier on. And there were certain topics. You want me just to mention some
please,
of them?
Yes, please, go ahead. I think we have a few minutes left before Nazir is going to give us a quick report on the talkers.
So the presentation deals with the management of budgets, constitutions, and contracts. So it talks about why should a masjid have a constitution, the formation of management structures, association with a constitution or a trust or the deed of trust. Then it deals with, explaining the two different structures, whether it's an association or whether it's a deed of trust, and what goes into the constitution, what goes into the deed of trust, and also ownership of immovable property, you know, how the property is registered in the name of the trust or in the association. And then lastly, with contracts, employment contracts. How does the Masjid Committee employ people, whether it's the imam, whether it's admin people, or whether it's people working for the Masjid? So that was just basically, what the presentation would have dealt with here. So that's something to think about. We could add, subtract from that, but I think it's a probably a useful presentation.
Faisal, just based on what you're saying now, and I'm going to take the liberty to invite the community, the mosque community, especially people that are involved in the administration of masjids and, of course, interested parties of masjids, is to contact myself and Faisal and Nazir via the legal cafe on 082-336-3778. And we will, of course, make an appointment for that masjid, and we will, free of charge, come out to that masjid, to that community, and we'll maybe do a bit of a presentation. And if there's very specific questions that you have that we can answer, if I just look at one of the questions that came through on the WhatsApp line now, it says, Salam, if your constitution states an AGM will be held every 3 years, but the current committee refuses that AGM, what can the community do? That's exactly the type of questions we will deal with, because there are mechanisms to deal with that type of situation. So please feel free, members of the masjid committees, imams, shuyukhs, and call on us to assist. We've got other colleagues as well that will assist, you know, the masjids to get up to scratch in terms of the administration. So, yeah, so that basically covers that. Faisal, want to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think that will be a nice team if we could, you know, go out there and assist myself, you and Azir, if he's available. And we can do it, you know, over Saturday or Sunday type of thing, and, you know, empower the masjids and the committees as far as these things are concerned, son. And we offer that, inshallah, and hopefully we can assist. Now with the COVID, I'm sure we could start on those type of presentations with the protocols being all observed.
Okay, excellent. And of course, we can deal with workshops up to 50 people. And we bring with our own audiovisual equipment and that type of thing, so people don't have to worry about those things. They might just say, "Os unang for yalla," and they give us a date and the time. And inshallah, if our diaries permit, we will be there. So, Nazir, lastly, a question on this dog case. In fact, I was quite intrigued when I read it. So, can you just take us through it?
Yes, son, the basis of this particular case has got a very, very old foundation in our law where those pet owners, especially those who own or are responsible for vicious dogs, must take really note of this particular case where this particular individual was attacked by three dogs. The owners of the three dogs were sued for 2.3 or 2.4 million rand.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the individual who was bitten was successful in the court in Pretoria, Port Elizabeth. And the owners of the dogs took the matter on appeal. Obviously, it's a lot of money that I have to fork out. And in the appeal court, they also failed to overturn the decision. So they were forced to pay the 2.4 million rand.
Well, I doubt if they can afford that 2.4 million just like that. Will probably wipe them out financially.
Well, son, I've read the initial case that was dealt with in the High Court in Port Elizabeth, and I think the area where the individual was bitten was quite an upstanding area. So whether or not they can afford it is another question, but they are now in for 2.4 million just because of negligence with regard to the care and control of vicious animals.
Okay,
and like I said, this is a old principles in our law, and it's just been developed over the years. There are certain exceptions.
The old principle is based on Roman Dutch law, I take it.
What I've read, it goes back all the way to Justinian law. So
yeah, it was the Actio Dei Pauperi, whatever that. I mean, I'm sure they don't use that in the courts anymore, but definitely it's part of the Roman law. But
yeah.
What's shocking about that case is that. The quantum, I mean, of 2.4 million for a bite, I don't know what the extent of the damage was to that person, but the fact that...
Yeah, the amputate is on.
Okay, well, that's worth 2.4 million. But the reality is that you can't determine what the damage is. Once a dog bites, he bites. And, I would hate to think what the quantum would have been had that person died.
Yeah, I found, look, this particular individual who was the victim of all of this, he was a gardener and a refuse collector in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So he was known in the area, and when the dogs attacked him, all the neighbors came out, they saw the commotion. Initially, the owners tried to argue that dogs that were biting him weren't theirs, but eventually they had to give up on that particular argument.
Mm-hmm.
Then they tried to convince the court that the gates were locked and there was a break in at their house, and an intruder basically lifted the gate off its hinges.
Mm-hmm.
That defense also failed. So all these defenses that were tried to be raised, unfortunately, didn't assist the owners of the dog. And they are out of pocket by 2.5 million rand for a dog bite.
But Nazir, there are defenses to your dog biting someone. Just run us through those.
There are three defenses recognized in our law. One would be where the animal is provoked to the point where he now attacks. The other is where an individual is jumping into a neighbor's yard and that guard dog now attacks him. So he's in a place where he shouldn't be. And the third defense is if I leave my animal in the care of a third party and the dog attacks while he's in the care of a third party, I as the owner can't be held liable for whatever damages occur as a consequence.
Okay, cool. So shukran for that, Nazir. And I just want to say, you know, what's worrying is that in the Muslim community, you find that people that have dogs normally have quite big, vicious dogs because they don't allow the dog into the house. They have the dog in the yard. Whereas in other communities, non-Muslim communities, they are quite fine having the dog inside the house. So therefore, there's like these little small dogs that we normally see in Sea Point and these places. And so that means the Muslim community who has these vicious dogs in their yards should actually be a lot more vigilant about their dog causing damage to anybody or biting anybody. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's important. What worries me is that, you know, people walking around with dogs and they don't have their dogs on their leash. Mm-hmm. And they always tell you, no, don't worry, my dog doesn't bite, you know, and So that is a concern because especially for walkers or runners or whatever the case may be, and here the dogs come along and they are not on the leash and the dog just starts to attack. So those owners must be very careful.
Yeah, okay, gentlemen, that's all that is it for Fanan. Shukran very much for coming on air. I think we've covered quite a bit of issues. For those people that want Faisal's number or Nazir's number, they can contact the Legal Cafe on 082-336-3778. And of course, also, those people that have a question that wasn't answered tonight on the WhatsApp line, please send it to that number and we'll see if we can assist you. So from my side, from my guest's side, shukran very much. And I say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
My radio station, your radio station, our radio station, the voice of the Cape.